Welcome to the Kids Joining Eternity podcast, where we help break the silence surrounding miscarriage, stillbirth, and infant loss. Some of the content may be graphic or triggering, but our goal is to help provide healing, hope, and education to the community.
Welcome to the Kids Joining Eternity podcast, where we help break the silence surrounding miscarriage, stillbirth, and infant loss. Some of the content may be graphic or triggering. Our goal is to provide healing, hope, and education to our community. This is April, and I am sorry, but Sydney is not able to join us this week. She is sick, but we are still going to do our episode. We have a very special guest today. And this is my very own OBGYN, Dr. Levine, who I absolutely adore. And thank you so much for coming to do this today. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
So I've known you since 2007, so I have a long time.
We're not that old.
No, we're not. And you have been with me through every pregnancy, every good pregnancy, every bad pregnancy.
Yep.
You've been there with me through it all. So yep. The only person who knows my story better than me is you, because you've been there. So I'm glad that we could finally have this opportunity, because I feel like I've been fortunate with my experiences that I really haven't had too many bad ones where I feel like, you know, things went wrong or it just left me feeling blah. And I've been lucky. There are not other women that have been so lucky. And one of the things I wanted to talk to you today about was maybe some of the things we've experienced together or mm-hmm. separately where we feel like we can educate the healthcare community as a whole to make some changes that will help women and families navigate loss.
Absolutely.
So we were chit-chatting before.
Yes.
And we can just start by talking about some of the things that you and I have experienced together with my losses.
Yes.
And the first one would be not you, but medical assistants or other people involved in a patient's care not carefully reading the records and understanding what the patient is actually there for.
Right.
And yeah.
So do you want me to elaborate on that?
Yes, please.
So this
please.
Was an experience that April had where a staff member in my office did not realize that she had had a pregnancy loss and was asking her questions about breastfeeding. And I mean, it's horrifying. It's really horrifying. And it just, you know, when she had gone home from the hospital, nothing had gotten changed in the computer chart. And, you know, when the appointment was made, they scheduled it as a postpartum, which it is.
Right.
But someone should have made a note. And since that happened, I've been super OCD about trying to prevent that from happening, like putting my own notes in there and talking to the schedulers and talking to the medical assistants. Like, if I know someone is coming in that day, be like, hey, so-and-so is coming in here today. And then in bold, hot pink, like huge cap letters, like, please be sensitive
yes.
to this patient's loss. And hopefully they actually look at it. I can't control what other people look at, but I try to do everything that I can to make sure that never happens again. Because, you know, in my old office, it was really small. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew everybody and what was going on with everybody. And when you're in a larger clinic situation, that doesn't always happen. And so I feel like as obstetricians and midwives and whoever else is providing medical care, we need to really take that into account and be sensitive about it.
Absolutely.
And otherwise it's just digging a knife in.
I have to say though, it was a good thing that it happened to me, if it could happen to anyone, because at that point, I think that was my fourth loss. So it wasn't anything new, so to speak, that I was experiencing, except I always take those as teachable moments. And
right.
I have since the very beginning. And I don't know if you remember, but after I lost Alexander, and I was there for my postpartum, you had, I don't know if it was a student nurse or an actual, like, resident with you.
It was probably a nurse practitioner student back when I used to take
students. And you asked if they could be in the room, and I said, absolutely. And that has also been the case when I have delivered one of my babies mm-hmm. at the hospital. because I do feel like it's a wonderful opportunity for them to experience this the right way, mm-hmm. and almost like helping to train these future, yes. caregivers what you need to do in this situation.
And I love that you will speak up. Like, you're going to let us know.
Yes.
What's up, and you know what, and you're really kind about it.
Well, thank you. And,
but I actually, it makes me feel bad because I feel like a lot of patients wouldn't say anything, and I would have no idea that the medical assistant had gone in and said something like, hey, are you breastfeeding? Or, oh. you know, like,
was it a boy or a girl? And what's
well, your, no, I mean, the boy I or mean, girl, I think is actually a valid question.
But yes.
If yes. the patient is in the right place.
Absolutely.
Emotionally.
Absolutely.
Because I feel like that honors.
Well, and if the question baby. Was phrased in reference to the loss as opposed to a regular.
Right, right. If they understand, they could say, you know, do you mind if I ask?
And I do that too. Anytime I have a conversation with a woman about a loss, I said, do you mind if I ask you about your baby?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Like, what can we do to honor your baby?
Yes. Okay. So that was the first one.
Okay.
And then the second one that you and I went kind of through with was, well, wait, which one were we going to talk about next?
I think the, was it that one?
Oh, yes. Okay. Okay. So all of my deliveries have happened at one location here in the city, one hospital. Mm-hmm. And this hospital has a tradition of playing the rock-a-bye baby lullaby anytime a baby is born at the hospital. And they
and
play
a lot
it.
Of the hospital. It's not just this particular okay. hospital. I have delivered at multiple hospitals.
You would know that, yeah.
I want to say I don't deliver at all of them anymore, but most of them do something along those lines.
Okay. So yeah. in this particular hospital, it is hospital wide. At least it was at one point. So anywhere in the hospital.
Yeah.
And as somebody who would be at a hospital to deliver a baby that is not going to come home with me, hearing that music over and over again was incredibly disturbing. And I have noticed through my journey that they have taken it out of the rooms, so they don't play it in the actual room anymore, which is a good thing.
But it's still being.
But you can still hear
hospital.
It in the hall. So
yeah, and so.
And you were telling me that you actually made a suggestion because this hospital is getting ready to build a new birthing center.
Yes. So the hope being that since we're designing from the ground up, that maybe when they're designing the sound system or how they set up that particular thing to play, if they're going to do it in the new birthing center, that hopefully we can at least set aside a few rooms for what we call pride, which is, you know, how we designate when someone has had a loss so that people going into the room are aware.
It stands for parents responding to the infant death experience.
Yes. And we try to designate the room that the patient's in with a card on the door so that anyone entering that room understands that they're walking into a loss scenario and not a happy scenario, and to be appropriately respectful.
Right.
And so I'm hoping, I am not personally on the planning committee.
Why not?
Because I'm lazy? No. Because
it's not like you're delivering babies or anything. I mean,
well, you know, all the other people on the planning committee, well, not the administrative people, but, you know, the other obstetricians on there are equally busy to me. I just really don't like administrative meetings. Yeah. So I really don't like administrative meetings, and it's going to be a lot of that. But unfortunately, administrative meetings have to happen before things get done. So I'm hopeful that having made this suggestion to somebody who is on that committee,
yes.
that there will be a way that they can accommodate for that. Now, I'm not sure because they also need to pipe alarms in for,
right.
you know,
right.
fire alarm and, you know
what?
Come downstairs.
We're in 2021. If they can't figure this out by now.
But again, that's one of the advantages of building something from the ground up. I am
yes.
hopeful that this will be a thing. I can't promise that it's going to be a thing, but we're going
to
try.
But we've been presented with an opportunity to really make a change,
yes.
and an impactful one at that.
Yes.
So we're trying.
Yes.
We're trying. Okay.
The suggestion has been made, and we will see.
Yes. Okay. So some of the things that, you know, we've talked about so far were just my experiences.
Right.
And I've been very, very fortunate because these are pretty much it. And there are a lot of women out there that have had one terrible experience after another. And mm-hmm. so both you and I have reached out separately to women that we know and asked them, mm-hmm. what are some things that could be different or that could make this a little easier for you? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we talked about was just having more time with the baby. And once again, this is something that I feel, and you would agree, that most of the hospitals here do a really good job with. But there are some out there that don't. And, you know, I got to spend all the time in the world with my babies mm-hmm. every time I was there. And some of my losses are relatively early. So it's not like, you know, it's, mm-hmm. it's a baby. But that's definitely something I think that in other places...
Yeah, I feel like most of the places that I have delivered have been pretty good about letting people be with their babies when they want to be with their babies. And if yeah. they don't want to be with their babies, not forcing it on them either. Because right. everybody grieves differently. Everybody exactly. is in a different emotional journey.
Yeah.
But having that available as an option and giving people choices, I think, is really important. Because when you're in a situation like that where you feel so helpless and you have no power and no control over yeah. what has just happened, to be able to make choices about what happens from that point on, I think is pretty important.
Well, and there have been some really great advances in technology that have allowed us to be able to spend mm-hmm. more time with our babies. There are things called cuddle cots or cooling cots, which are devices that help the babies be able to look like babies for a little longer mm-hmm. and spend more time with their families. So
it's
those
basically
are
basically a bassinet
yes.
that is refrigerated.
It's hooked up to an ice machine.
Yeah. And so it keeps your baby cooler,
right.
but in the room with you.
Right, right. Okay. So then you mentioned that you talked to somebody about mm-hmm. an experience
yeah.
that a healthcare professional had.
Yes.
About making false promises or
yes.
giving false hope.
Yeah. I feel like as healthcare providers, we want to be able to fix everything. We want everything to be okay all the time. And so this particular person told me that when she had miscarried, someone in the office sort of blew off her feelings. You know, she had already had some bad feelings about what was going on with the pregnancy, and they blew her off. And they couldn't find the heartbeat. They were just like, oh, you know, don't worry. Everything is, we're going to find that heartbeat. It's going to be okay. And we have to be really careful about making promises that we can't keep, because I can never promise to anybody that I'm going to be able to find the heartbeat. And it makes me nervous until I do find the heartbeat. And every time one of my staff has a hard time finding a heartbeat, I am saying a prayer the whole time I'm doing an ultrasound
yeah.
that I'm going to find a heartbeat. Like I pray so much in the office. I'm not even that religious.
That's not
a bad
thing. Well, and you know, being my doctor and going through my experiences with me, because my losses are very routine and like similar, if that makes sense. And so you were somebody that was always...
I hate to think of it like that.
I know, but when you do that, that's really what it is. But when you look at, you know, every time I would go in for an ultrasound with you, there was never anything like that said. Or, I mean...
But you also usually knew.
Well, but even...
Before, I mean, and again,
well,
I feel like a lot of patients
yes.
do have an idea. Sometimes they have no idea,
but you know, there was that one time that I was wrong.
Yes.
It was only one time I was wrong. But there was also, you know, for most of my pregnancies, you were just giving me ultrasounds every time I was coming in, just
yes.
because that's what I wanted and you were comfortable with that.
Yes.
And it was great. It helped me with my anxiety and it was a wonderful thing. So,
to be honest, it helped me with my anxiety about your pregnancies as well. So,
served a dual purpose there.
There you go.
So, yeah, it really was a team effort. Okay, so we talked about that, and, you know, I will agree with you. I did have one sort of experience with that with Ethan, and
mm-hmm.
Ethan was my 24-week loss,
mm-hmm.
and it was, they were, you know,
yeah,
trying to do all of that.
That,
and I said, it's okay, you know, I'll be okay with whatever the outcome is, and then she turned to me and said, now, you said you would be okay with whatever the outcome is, right?
Oh, gosh.
And then told me, and I was like, so... That would have been the time where it probably wasn't an appropriate way to tell the patient.
Yeah, I didn't even.
And once again, that was not you.
I know, but yeah. Wow, you never told me that.
Oh, I didn't?
No, I mean, we were just dealing with the shock of it when it happened.
Yes, because we'll backtrack to that in a minute after
the
podcast.
Okay, we'll talk about
that later. But this is what we do. We get sidetracked. Okay,
sorry.
So that's okay. So, but one of the other things that this person that you spoke with was the early loss versus...
Yeah, that there is... that some people have this sort of ageism in terms of when you lose a pregnancy, and that a loss is a loss. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, 4 weeks pregnant. You just got a positive pregnancy test and you are pregnant, and then you miscarry a couple days later, you are still suffering a loss. That doesn't, like, nobody should ever say to you, oh, well, you were only 4 weeks along.
Yes. And that's something I tell people all the time, is a loss is a loss. 6 weeks, 36 weeks, it doesn't matter. You lost your baby.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel like it's important to be cognizant of that, because I personally have never lost a pregnancy. I have friends that are obstetricians that have, and who feel like that actually helped them understand better.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean, like, go and seek out an obstetrician who tells you that they've had a miscarriage, because...
Well, but I've even had a male obstetrician who, him and his wife had a pregnancy, a second trimester pregnancy loss. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he shared that with me, and it obviously, it was evident in his care that he had experienced that, because he knew the right things to say and the right things to do. So, but yes, a loss is a loss.
Yeah, so I forget where I was going with my train of thought on this, but I think it's important that we
validate those early losses.
I'm sorry, I'm getting distracted. My phone's ringing over here, and I'm like,
what is he calling about?
You
are a doctor, so.
Sorry about that. But going back to that, I think that it is important to acknowledge that as soon as you get that positive pregnancy test, it sets off this chain reaction of being a parent. Now, I will also say, not everybody has the same reaction to being pregnant, and not all parents are excited about pregnancies. I think most of the people listening to this podcast are excited about their pregnancies, or were excited about their pregnancies that they then lost. But if it was an unplanned pregnancy and then they get excited about it and then they have a loss, that comes with more mixed emotions. And that's okay.
All of my losses were unplanned. They were not unwanted.
Right.
They were just unplanned. Right. And so, yeah, I mean, there was a little bit of that, but we could do a whole podcast episode on that alone. Okay, so back to what we were discussing earlier and improvements. Your friend that you spoke to that had the early miscarriage. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're listening to this podcast, chances are you know this. But for those of you that don't, if you have a miscarriage in the first trimester, sometimes you are given the option to have the miscarriage at home through the help of medication and not in a hospital setting. There are situations that arise, and I will let you take over it from that.
So, again, getting back to the being able to have choices thing, I think it's really important when you're telling someone that they have lost their pregnancy, if they haven't already passed the pregnancy and it's still there and you have to kind of decide where you go from there, to have options as to what to do.
Yes.
And sometimes not doing anything is an option. It's a decent option, and some people choose that, and some people find that distressing, and there's not a right or wrong there. Surgical options are out there. These days, surgical options are not as popular as, like, having a D&C for your miscarriage is not as popular as it was 15 years ago when I was first in practice, because back then people had $500 deductibles and it was not a big deal. And now people have $10,000 deductibles. Yes. And it's a really big deal financially. So
once again, we could do a whole other podcast episode on that.
I mean, the system is broken, but I actually warn patients about that, because some of my patients say, okay, yes, I want a DNC. And I say, okay, I hate to say this, but you really need to check with your insurance, because if you have not met your deductible, you need to know what your deductible is, because if you haven't met it, you're going to be paying a lot of money. And I don't want this to be a financial hardship for you when you're already going through an emotional hardship. But if they choose another option, like watchful, regardless of what option you choose, it's really important for us to prepare you for what is going to happen. If you just decide to wait and hope that you spontaneously pass the baby, then yes. I need to let you know what that looks like.
Right.
And I can't predict it. Is. Yeah. I can't predict it 100%. And it might be tomorrow. It might be 2 months from now. It could be a really, really long time, but what that looks like in terms of miscarrying at home, or if we give you medications to help speed up that process, what that looks like at home, and what to expect if you're going to the pharmacy to pick up the medications, to know that this is going to suck. You're going to sit there at the pharmacy and you're going to know why you're at the pharmacy and what medications you're there to pick up. And it's not a good place mentally to be, and to prepare you for that.
So maybe some more focus on the mental and emotional aspects of what you're experiencing, mm-hmm. in addition to the physical,
yes.
Symptoms and
I feel like most of us give a pretty good idea about, okay, you're going to experience a lot of bleeding,
cramping and bleeding and
stuff like that. And it can be a shocking amount of blood. And I have had friends with miscarriages that did not expect it to be that much.
Yeah.
And so I try to tell people it's going to be a lot.
Well, and it's a good thing to prepare people for sure. When you do something like that. And then this same friend, I think, that you were telling me about, and this is something that thankfully I have not run into, because I work at a wonderful place, but when it happened at a different place, but FMLA and bereavement leave.
Yes.
And this is a much bigger problem than we can tackle alone. It's a nationwide problem. This country is awful. Don't even get me started. I get on a soapbox for an hour on this. But
I love the U.S., but we have some problems.
Yes, yes. So, but that is something, and I'll let you jump in again from there.
So, I mean, miscarriage in the hospital is a surgical procedure. If you're having surgery, it's usually pretty easy for your doctor to fill out the forms and say, she had surgery on this and that day, and she needs this amount of time for recovery because it's surgery. But if you have a miscarriage and you're at home, which in some ways physically can be harder than having a DNC.
Oh, I would think it would be physically way harder.
And emotionally.
Yeah, and that too.
So FMLA, apparently, I don't know for everybody, but I would say for probably most people, it's not going to cover that. They're going to tell you, well, this wasn't a real loss, which is baloney. Or if you try to get bereavement time off, they're going to say, well, it wasn't a real baby. And that is also baloney. It was a real baby. And, you know, us as doctors will try to do what we can do to fill out those forms to get you some time off, because it is important to take time for yourself.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if you're miscarrying at home, that is going to, you're not going to be able to work and do that at the same time.
It's, no.
You're not. It's ridiculous to expect anybody to go to work quickly after that.
And I have on several of mine deliveries and, you know, DNCs, I've gone to work, you know, 2 days afterwards.
I have obstetrician friends who, I mean,
it sucks, but it's just, it's unfortunately the system is broken.
Yeah. So that is definitely a place where we could improve. I don't know what we as healthcare professionals could do for that other than lobby really hard.
Yeah.
I don't know how FMLA laws get adjusted. But I do think, and I didn't even know that was a thing, because I just always fill out the forms and I assume that the powers that be read my forms and give my patients the leave that I ask for them.
And
that doesn't always happen. And so sometimes people have to take personal time at additional financial cost. So it's...
Well, and FMLA, was unpaid anyway.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
Okay. And then the last thing that we wanted to discuss is that maybe help educate people that partners grieve differently through mm-hmm. this process.
Yes. So, I mean, everyone grieves differently.
Right,
all women grieve differently.
And we should be.
Husbands grieve and partners yes. grieve differently.
Yes. So it's just, I guess, maybe. And I will say the binders that the hospital hands out mm-hmm. actually address that. And so that is very helpful.
But not all hospitals have that binder.
But not all. Exactly.
So, I mean, I don't know off the top of my head, but I would assume that that is not a universal thing.
It should be. So there we go. There's our another call to action right there.
But it's important to know that as a physician that some people will react with anger. We've all heard about the stages of grief. And,
yes.
And I tend to agree with most of them. But not everybody goes through them in that exact order.
Right.
Not everybody goes through them and then gets through it. Some people will backtrack. Some people will start the process late. Some people will be triggered by a subsequent pregnancy that at that point it really hits home. So you can't assume that your partner is going to feel the same way that you do about this loss as yeah.
Absolutely. So yeah, we've touched on some great things today, and I just want to thank you so much again for being here and doing this.
Well, thank you so much for asking me.
And hopefully we can powwow maybe with some other healthcare professionals and
sure.
do another episode. So,
well, we have a lot of great nurses that probably would be a good option for coming in and talking about their side of things.
That yes, and that's that's what we need, because my whole goal with all of this is just to get people talking mm-hmm. and to educate and help women walk this, because I don't think that anybody should have to do this alone, because it sucks.
Agree 100%. And another thing along that line, I think as obstetricians and midwives and whoever is taking care of you, hopefully we've acknowledged to you that this sucks, because it does.
Yes.
And it's normal to have feelings about that. And what those feelings are, I can't tell you what you are supposed to be feeling, but I can tell you that the situation sucks. And
you can get a cookie cake that says that too.
I think that had some 4-letter words on it though. that is not something that that you can expect your obstetrician to do for
Best
you.
Cookie cake ever, ever.
That's a long story.
Oh, for another day.
For another podcast.
For another day.
But
well, thank you again so much for coming. This is April Rutledge for the Kids Joining Eternity podcast. Thank you for helping us to break the silence surrounding miscarriage, stillbirth, and infant loss. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest or share your story on the podcast, please email Sydney at sydneyaustin@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and happy holidays.
Thank you for listening to the Kids Joining Eternity podcast. For more information, please visit kidsjoiningeternity.org.